Welcome back to NALP's Young Professional Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our Young Professional Network partner, Still. Still makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at stillusa.com. Today's episode will be presented by the Latino Landscape Network. Your host of today's episodes include myself, Tim Martinez. I'm with Landcare. I've got Jennifer Menhavad with me from Gachina Landscape and Debbie Bardish from Chalet Nursery. Jennifer, Debbie, how you guys doing today?
Well, Tim, I'm doing great and I'm really looking forward to this. How are you doing, Jennifer?
I'm great.
Awesome. Yeah, this will be fun having the Latino Landscape Network take this over for a bit today. And I'm so honored and pleased to be able to connect with our listeners today. Jennifer, a little bit about yourself from Gachina. Want to just give the audience a little background of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a Bay Area native with about 6 years of HR experience, and I've been with Gachina for about 3 years. I am a SHRM certified professional, and I got my AS in business administration from the College of San Mateo, and I like to run, prepping for a 10K in November. I'm so nervous.
Woo, 10K. I like it. Good stuff. Thank you, Jennifer. Debbie?
I have a confession. I am definitely a nerd. I'm a nerd through and through. I've got 3 degrees. I earned all of them while working full-time as an adult.
Wow.
And I primarily came from semiconductor manufacturing. Also, I worked in management consulting and industrial supplies distribution. I did come to the landscaping industry. I'm coming up on 9 years, so this is a big deal for me. And awesome. One of the reasons that I was attracted to the industry was the Latino side. And I can talk about that a little bit later, but I'm very excited to be here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Congratulations from semiconductors to plant material. So I love it. I love it. You know, my career actually started early on in the golf industry. So I was a golf course superintendent by trade. That's what I did for many, many years. Found my way to commercial landscape, and I currently serve Landcare in the western part of the United States. So I support our business units from Seattle down to Washington, through Arizona, California, Nevada. So up and down the West Coast primarily. So I love it. It's such an awesome opportunity to see a huge diverse of people, of team members, of horticulture opportunities, just the wide variety. It's so awesome to be able to see that and meet a lot of a huge cross section of individuals and people. So I love my role, love my job, and love my organization and the company. And it's been awesome. Wouldn't go back. So, yeah.
I did forget to say what I do now. I forgot to say what I did in this industry. So for the first 4 years, I was an HR manager. And for almost the last 5, I scheduled construction crews. Sorry, awesome. Later detail.
No, that's great. I think that gives you an opportunity to see so much in the business and to be able to have great visibility. And Jennifer, I know you're in the background and moving bodies through the organization and getting them in and getting them prepped. And so I think it gives each of us a unique perspective into the Latino demographic and, you know, the challenges that some landscape companies could be faced with. And so, Debbie, I saw the NALP, the Edge article that was published, I don't know, not too long ago, a week or so ago. And it was titled Bridging the Cultural Gap. And I know you had some really neat stuff in there and Pam Berrios as well. I know Jill Odom wrote the article, but, really interesting takes on bridging the cultural gap and Latinos and their orientation towards family and work ethic and camaraderie. And, when you think about that, Debbie, what are the things that you and Chalet and you're in Illinois, right? Chicago, where are you at exactly? Chicago?
We are just north of Chicago. We do have a few facilities. We have a store and garden center in Wilmette, which is closer to Chicago. Then we have an office plaza immediately north of that, where we house a lot of our corporate and HR functions. Then the third facility is where I'm physically sitting. I'm about probably 8 miles south of the Wisconsin state line. And this is our largest facility employment-wise. At the height of the season, we could have 175 people working out of here, including our seasonal folks. And then our
Got
fourth
it.
facility is a farm in southern Wisconsin, where we grow a lot of our own plant material, and we also source to others as well.
Awesome. Awesome. With that many individuals, I'm sure there are people coming and there are people going. And the article that Jill wrote with you and Pam, again, spoke primarily towards bridging the cultural gap. Debbie, what do you see in Chalet's from Chalet's perspective in having a cultural awareness to these team members that are joining your organization? What are the key things and the watch outs? Don't need you to regurgitate the whole article again, but you had some really cool points that I think were brought up by you and Pam.
One thing out of the box is making people feel welcome during the onboarding process. Culture is so huge. And myself and others, we just try to be very, very sensitive to that. You want to welcome people very warmly. If you can include food, that's fantastic. But you want to give them a tour. You want to talk to them, get to know them, learn about their family. They want to learn about your family. And then we do a lot of things with food here. And that is fantastic. I mean, that's just good stuff. Just fantastic. I mean, even salsas, how many different kinds of salsas are there, right? Unlimited, probably thousands. And we have a salsa competition. This is the second year we've did it. And it's just a lot of fun. Really good stuff. Really good stuff.
I love it. I love it. Jennifer, what is Gacina faced with from a cultural awareness perspective up in the Bay Area? What do you guys see?
Well, with the Bay Area, I mean, majority of us are Hispanic Latinos. So I think our diversity just comes within the different variations within the Hispanic and Latino communities. So when we actually bring people on board, it's educating the Latino population that we all come from different countries and we all have sort of a little bit of a difference in dialect and just even in the foods that we eat. So we do a lot of events, team bonding events, anything with food brings people together. Everything with music brings people together. That's one thing. I think it's pretty similar across anyone from any country in Latin America is food and music will always bond people. Even if there's like a language barrier, it'll bring people together. So for us, that's very big. We have a picnic coming up on August 27th, and we're just really excited to just bring the entire company, not just our corporate teams, not just our field teams, but both together. And we're just like, okay, how are we going to keep the kids entertained? What kind of music are we going to play? Is the food going to be good? What is the timing? Is the weather going to be great? It's just bringing a lot of the values that are in the culture, which is like family and respect and sharing that amongst each other so they can get to know the face
I
to
love
face.
it. I love it. Yeah. I'll be there for the barbecue, by the way. So you just got to tell me the location. So no, that's awesome. It was it was interesting to look at that article, Debbie, that you participated in, and Jennifer, you reiterated. There was a lot spoken about Latinos and their tight bonds with family. And family almost above all else, right? And so the relationships, the families, their work ethic that they bring to any organization that they join, and that sincere desire for camaraderie, within the community. And so look, I don't think that is necessarily inclusive to the Latino population or the demographic. I think that's just the human nature in general. But it's magnified a little bit when you have these individuals that are coming from not their native land. They're in an unfamiliar land, and I think that those qualities and traits are that much more magnified. Their bonds to family and having some semblance of normalcy and you know, in immersing themselves into their work, which I think generates that work ethic and having the camaraderie. Jennifer, I know you brought up a really good point that I think oftentimes inside of Landcare, there's a lot of employees. I don't know what we have, but it's a lot. And I think most Latinos get generalized into you're from Mexico. And that's not the case, right? Like not everybody is from Mexico, but you see a Latino and you say, okay, I've got my H-2Bs and you know, they came from Mexico, but it's actually quite diverse. Debbie, when you see the diversity of people traveling or relocating from Central America, South America into your business units, it's like what kind of representation do you see? Where are the dots on the map for your team members? Do you have an awareness of that?
We do have an awareness of that. And this is why we have gatherings like we do. And there's some of these things are impromptu, like in the morning when the crews are going out. We really encourage socializing and bonding. And one thing that we've done too is we've taken like H2B people from El Salvador and then also from Mexico, and we can have a mixture on one crew. And that really encourages learning about the different cultures because they are quite different.
Yeah.
And even the non-H2B employees that we've had here long-term, they're not all from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They can be from different parts of South America. And so the more you get to learn about people in the backgrounds, the more you understand this.
Right.
And it's really intense.
Jennifer, when you see your team members all blended together, have the cultural differences among Hondurans or Guatemalans or Mexicans or Haitians, have any of those fleshed out in your organization? Have you run into problems like that, or have you had smooth sailing?
To say smooth sailing, it wouldn't be the honest truth. I mean, within the Latino culture, I mean, without diving too deep into like the entire history of Latin America, is we know that in a lot of countries, there's a lot of social economics that play into it, poverty. So there tends to be these little feelings of like superiority, especially when it comes to like educational background, economic background, and even just certain neighborhoods. So I'm sure there's been tiffs here and there within different cultures because one believes they're superior to the other. But it's really just bringing that understanding that we're in a work environment. We all have the same value of strong work ethic, and we all have families to support. So reframing that and making that the focus versus, oh, well, they're from here and they're from there and our groups can't mix, is trying to move away from that and just like, we're all here for the same goal. We all came here for the same goal.
Mm-hmm.
We have this thing called the Gachino way, which is respect, professionalism, and courtesy in the workplace. And just having that constant reminder, just treat other people the way you want to be treated. Be respectful, even if there are differences. I mean, we don't have to like each other, but we do have to work together. And like I said, anytime you involve food or music, somehow that just makes things a little bit easier. But perfection, no. Where have there been issues? Of course, but that's all part of working with a community with so many different backgrounds, whether it's, you know, they're immigrants, first generation, second generation, and stuff like that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, Jennifer, you're in a unique situation being in HR, that if there are tiffs and kerfuffles that occur inside of a business unit or inside of a truck, you know, that's going out servicing clients, that you're going to be one of the first people that probably hear about it, if at all, right? And so you get that unique perspective. I think that's something similar. I think an opportunity or a challenge is to start with that general awareness that there are differences, that there are cultural differences. And, you know, the old adage is one size fits one. And that's what this is. Each of these individuals are different, and you can't apply, you know, the same techniques across to everybody from those different cultural backgrounds. I've seen it exceptionally pronounced between Guatemalans and Hondurans. And so there are those tiffs, those socio-economical, you know, tiffs that arise between them. I've seen it in Mexicans, in individuals that live in Jalisco State versus people coming from Sonora State. And those things kind of develop. And, you know, I think those opportunities to bring people to common ground and the opportunities to bond with breaking bread and food, I think that's, you know, those are all really good ideas. I'll tell you, in one of our business units, actually, it was up in the Pleasanton market in East Bay. We had a team member that figured out where everybody was from and hung their national flag in the shop. And so when you go into the shop right now, there's, I don't know, 8 or 10 different colored flags all out there, and everybody has their home turf and their homeland represented via a flag. And so I think that just brings a sense of pride and a sense of openness that, you know, that there are differences, and put it on the table, and it does not need to be adversarial. It can be, it could be homogenistic, and everybody can work together. So Debbie, what else have you guys, you know, done to share that and create that sense of being between everybody?
Well, other than food and pairing people up, conversations, I did want to bring up, you were talking about earlier, Tim, sometimes the difference are not cultural. Sometimes it's personality.
Mm.
And I think that
human beings have a different personality? That's weird.
Well, I think that this whole like cultural bonding thing is helping with that as well.
Yeah.
It's just, it's overall goodness. It really is. Communication is key. Getting people to talk.
Yeah.
Getting people to talk is absolutely key. And people, we've all brought up respect. Respect. You can get that general respect. Like Jennifer was saying, we don't have to like each other, but we all have to work together. So
yeah, again, I think all things, these are part of the human condition and human beings, period. And human beings are different. You may come from the same town in South America, but you're still different, and people are just wired different. And I think not pigeonholing everybody or painting everybody with one broad paintbrush or one broad swath is certainly an important awareness. Jennifer, when Gacina's bringing team members in, tell me about, you know, your welcoming and your onboarding process. You already have a heavy Latino population in your organization already. And so how do you go about adding new team members to that mix?
Well, I'll be honest, it's pretty hard for the field. I mean, we have 380 employees spread across 5 different offices and 7 locations, and our account managers have one of the hardest jobs. They're managing operations, administration work, and they're still having to manage their teams and their clients. And it only just starts with the branch. So when you cut up the teams into smaller groups, like the branches, the branch manager will emphasize the importance of team bonding. So having these barbecues or celebrating, you know, we had a good safety week, or even just these morning tailgates on safety, it's an opportunity to help integrate the new hire. So when we bring someone on board, we do our traditional orientation. We talk about the rules, the policies, the do's and the don'ts. Getting them suited up in the uniform is kind of our first step, because we want our employees to feel already integrated. So having uniforms in stock, getting them in their safety vests, getting them into their PPE, getting them picked up by their manager and taken to the site, they have the opportunity to connect, because ultimately, like, they don't really see their managers as much as they see their crew leaders. So knowing who can have their back in case there's an issue, and then also reminding them, like, open door, communicate. If something isn't right, let us know, because we don't know unless you tell us. And then having them work with the crew leaders, and there's always going to be personality clashes. So having managers who are flexible with just moving people around until there's the right dynamic, because dynamics in a field setting, it's a lot of different pieces to move around until they get it right. Because ultimately, when the team is happy, the properties look good.
Right.
So having managers who are on top of it, being flexible, being in tune with the team, and then also having that space for them to speak and kind of adjust where needed is important. I mean, we've been talking about emotional intelligence at our company for a couple months now, and a lot of it is because we need to figure out how to get these teams to feel that they're part of a team. And a lot of it has to come with empathy and remembering they come from a whole different background from you. So maybe the things that we talk about every day, they don't have a clue. So it's just remembering like what our daily is not necessarily theirs.
Right.
But flexibility and empathy is literally the key. And then of course, I mean, it's up to the employee too. It's a two-way street. So hopefully if there's something we can help them with, great. If not, then I don't know.
Yeah, I think Jennifer, you point out a lot of the nuances from your typical landscape company, where team members come to a central location. You're only going to be as good as your local leader, your account managers, or your branch manager. So you know, the company's message will only be as good as their ability to deliver that. And then it further gets diluted. The message further gets diluted when they hop in the cab of a truck and drive away and spend the vast majority of their time with a crew supervisor. So it really creates some unique challenges where your supervisors need to be in alignment as well. Debbie, you guys have a handful of locations, but you're tied geographically to a physical location. You're either on the farm in Wisconsin, or you know, you're on the ground, and you know, your team members really aren't your team members really aren't being dispatched. You have a little bit more control over the messaging just by virtue of the garden center structure. What do you see from the welcoming and onboarding that Chalet does?
It is absolutely fantastic. I do have to say, though, that people that are onboarded here as a crew to do construction work, it might be actually quite some time before they meet a crew who actually works out of our retail store, who does like small planting jobs. There can be kind of a delay in time for that. That's something we can work on, but we are working on. But the distance does, even though we're kind of physically close, the distance does put a little bit of that in there.
Got
just
it.
If people don't see each other, you know, you don't have those conversations. So then you gotta go look at the bigger picture of company events. You know, how do we get everyone together?
Yeah, no, I understand. Yeah, I think one of the things that Landcare has been intentional with is that supervisor relationship with the team members that are inside of the vehicle. You know, our team members will come, they'll assemble, we can do our stretch and our dispatch, and everybody leaves. But you're in the yard for 15, 20 minutes in the morning, and maybe 15 or 20 minutes at the end of the day, and 7.5 hours you're spent with your work unit or your work group. And so if you have this disconnect with how the organization and how leadership views treating people and making them feel welcome, and you know, having that cultural awareness, you then in turn really are focused on training the supervisors, because that's their relationship, that's their unit for the vast majority of the time that a team member spends at work each day. And so it's been a heavy focus for Landcare to really focus on those supervisors and teaching them not how to prune a shrub or how to apply a herbicide, but really teaching them the soft skills side of what it takes to be a leader and to make people feel warm and welcoming and that general hospitable feeling to bring in a new team member into the business. So, look, we're not perfect, but we know that that's a huge opportunity for us, and we can endeavor and push on our branch leaders and our account managers, and we can push on all of those individuals. But it's where do your team members spend the vast majority of their time? That's really the area that we've chose to influence and try to control and train. So,
yeah, no, those relationships are so important, and I'm personally inspired by several of my Latino coworkers. Ones that started out in the field as a laborer. And just to give you one example, one of those people is currently a project manager, and he's outstanding. And so he understands those relationships, what it's like to be a laborer and have those relationships. And now he's grown into a management position, and he's retained that and has a lot of respect for it.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I think that kind of brings up, you know, the next topic that I'd like to shift to. And that's really, you know, what career paths look like inside of an organization for these team members. And, you know, Debbie, you brought this one example up of this team member who came in and was pointed along a career path. Mind sharing a little bit more about that, and you know how that worked, and how you identified that individual, and the training and the development that you bolted onto that.
Mm-hmm. This person is very, very open-minded, and I'm just going to be flat out and say it: they do not have a college education.
Yeah,
but you wouldn't know it. You wouldn't know it because this person started in the industry when they were 14, and they learned all of this as they went along, and they kept it. And they teach it to others. And this person is very open to learning things from other people, very open-minded culturally. And that is a huge attribute. That is absolutely huge.
Oh, that's awesome. Congratulations, Debbie. Jennifer, what do you see for offering your team members career succession, career planning, empowering team members with a career path? What do you see in Gachina?
Well, one thing I'm really proud about Gachina is they really do take the time to look at internal promotions, and we do emphasize our career paths. I mean, it's in our employee handbook. It's part of our onboarding process where, yes, you're starting off as an apprentice with like a year or less of experience, but these are opportunities that could be presented to you if this is something you are interested in. Because not everybody is with the goal of, I want to move upwards. Mm-hmm. You just need some people who are comfortable just being leveled out. And then you have some people who have the thirst to want to do more. And being here for about 3.5 years, I've literally seen someone come from the field, do levels 1, 2, and 3, crew leader, senior crew leader, and then promoted to production supervisor and be working under a senior account manager, getting them trained up so they can eventually have their own accounts and then be promoted to account manager. You know, we just had an account manager move into a corporate training position and is now an associate branch manager, and it's all internal without me having to go and look outside, because hiring outside is so hard for this industry. But yeah. Presenting the opportunities and then them seeing that is really feasible. And then on top of that, we have a really good partnership with JobTrain, which is a nonprofit organization that provides alternative programs for different career paths. And they offer free classes for ESL and for computers. So I give each new hire a flyer saying, hey, if you want to up your skills and you want opportunities, take advantage of JobTrain. They have classes on the afternoons for 8 weeks on English proficiency, which is could be level 1, 2, or 3. And then if you want to learn computers, they teach these computer classes in Spanish for free. There's so many community resources that you don't necessarily have to like learn everything on your own. But as an employer, to fill these positions that is already so hard to fill, present them the information, present them the resources. And then our HR team is super hands-on. So like my team would literally just come and be like, here, I'll do this for you. Oh, here, let me get your appointment over here, or let me send you over there, or let's walk over to your job train and get you enrolled. It's a lot. And it's been different for me because I'm not used to that, but it's like, okay, well, it's working, so let's keep doing it.
That's awesome. That's
That's really
awesome.
awesome. Yep, that is
Yeah.
really awesome.
Congratulations. Yeah, I was again referring back to that article, Bridging the Cultural Gap. It was interesting. There was a line in there, Debbie, I can't remember if it was yours or it was Pam, but one of you guys were quoted that, you know, change equals uncertainty. And you know, Jennifer, I love what you're doing because that change is uncertainty for individuals. And you know, I think a lot of times they have capabilities to advance their career, but because that would require a change, then they develop all of these self-doubts within them and they're not as confident, and it leads to that degree of uncertainty. And they're certainly capable, but they just need that little extra boost of confidence and that reassuredness that, hey, there is a serious career path for you. So I think identifying those individuals and taking them under your wing, and you're doing a little more, Jennifer, than taking them under your wing. You're going out and grabbing them by the ear and say, hey, here's what we're going to do. But I think that is commendable. And I, you know, I love, you know, what you guys are doing. And I think that's a big deal. Again, it's not just specifically to the Latino demographic. I think most people are always afraid of change. But having that nice ear, that confidant, that somebody that is generally interested in your development, when you can exhibit that to a human being, a person on your team, just magical things can happen. And it's so rewarding for everybody. So rewarding for the employee that's targeted, and rewarding for the leader to help them develop. So no, I love it. I love it. I'll tell you, I think, you know, irrigation technician, that's the position that absolutely drives me bonkers inside of Landcare. And so when you have an opening for an irrigation technician and you go to Indeed, or you go to jobs.com, or you go to your recruiter and you're trying to find that person, generally you end up regurgitating what is already available in the marketplace. But to find an individual on your team that is willing to learn and wants to grow and develop, I just don't think we do a good enough job at identifying those individuals and mentoring them along their career path. And it could be so much more than just irrigation technicians. These are the future leaders of the organization if it's done correctly. So I love it. Debbie.
I have to admit, Tim, when I was an HR manager, at one time I was so desperate for an irrigation person, I just couldn't. I ended up outsourcing. But you
Yeah.
know, that didn't have to be for too long, but that's what it came to. But mentoring is so important. And lots of times, well, we have this program here, we call it shadowing. And so what you could do is you can, for a set amount of time, like 2 hours or a whole day, depending on what the topic is, you can shadow somebody else.
Yeah.
And I liken it to trying on a prom dress before you buy it, right? So, you know, maybe you don't want to buy it when you're done, but maybe when you're done shadowing, you're like, hey, this is awesome. Yeah, I want this dress, you
Yeah.
know. But it sheds a lot of light on things for people, because sometimes, all puns intended, the grass can look greener on the other side, right? So you think something that this job, this person has, is, you know, just wonderful, and you go shadow them for a day and you learn, wow, that's like really difficult. Or it could be that, wow, I'm kind of attracted to that. Maybe it is difficult, but you know, I could do that. And it is just a
Absolutely.
great way to, the shadowing is wonderful.
No, I absolutely love that. I think that's awesome. When I think about that, Debbie, and I think about, you know, 300 plus employees in your, you know, spread across your five business locations, somewhere in there is one of your irrigators, right? It's just a matter of finding them and identifying them. And I love your shadowing program as well. So that's great. So, you know, when I think about this, Debbie, you and I have been on the Latino Landscape Network for a period of time. You know, what are the things about about that particular organization that drive you? First of all, I will commend you. I don't think you've missed one meeting yet. So thank you very much for your participation and your involvement and your engagement and your willingness to share over and over again. What is it about the LLN that drives you, to be a part of that group?
Well, I'm going to back up in time just a little bit. When I was in semiconductor manufacturing, I did spend the better part of 3 years in Asia. I was on a global implementation team for a new computer system. And not only did we have that, but the other half of our mission was to bridge the cultural gap, because we had plants all over Asia and they just were not communicating, just not communicating. And the first time I went to go teach a class on the new computer system in China, they all spoke English. I didn't have to speak Chinese. They all spoke English. Wow. And then on the third day, I said to them, class is over. You guys don't have to keep speaking English because you're trying to make me feel welcome. And that's when I found out they all came from different parts of China, different provinces of China. And the Chinese dialect is so different from one province to the other that they couldn't understand each other. But to graduate high school in China, you have to be fluent in English. So here they all are at this, manufacturing plant near Beijing. And the reason they can all communicate is because they all took English in high school. So it had not, so here's a great example of cultural misunderstanding. I thought that they were doing this to be polite to me and make me feel welcome. No, that's the only way they can communicate. So that was near and dear to my heart. Anyway, I right around 9/11, I won't go into that, but some sad things happened and several of us ended up not being in the industry anymore. So I, for a long time, realized that there was a void in my career life by not having cultural diversity as part of my job to work on. It was like an emptiness. So that's why I came to the landscaping industry. So that is a big part of why I came to the landscaping industry. So when I was hired, I was as an HR manager, not only the HR responsibilities, but I was charged with bridging the cultural gap within the company. And it was not Chalet, it was another employer. But that rift was huge. I'd never seen anything like it. So I saw it as a big challenge. So my previous employer belonged to the state association. They belong to NALP. But then there was this another association that came to my awareness called National Hispanic Landscape Alliance. And I wanted my employer to join, but it wasn't in the budget. So there was a nice executive director. His name is Ralph Iguis, if I'm saying that properly. Yep. And he was a very nice guy. I told him my plight, told him it wasn't in the company budget. So he let me join as a student. So I joined as a student. And that's how I became aware of NHLA. So when NALP absorbed NHLA, I just was awestruck. I was like, oh my goodness, this is fantastic, because their initiatives are now going to be seen more, get more recognition, seen more nationally, because NALP is just so far reaching and huge. So it's very personal to me. It's very inspiring to me. That's why I joined. I love what we do. I love that we're trying to educate. We're trying to teach that the boundaries are really not there. And I'm just very energized by the whole thing.
That's a fascinating
story. And the people, like Tim.
Yeah. Thank you, Debbie. That's a fascinating story. And the English proficiency in many, many Asian and European countries, I think, is absolutely fascinating. And wouldn't it be something if we all had a second language here in the United mm-hmm. States? So, Jennifer, I know a little bit about how you joined the organization. It's mostly because I grabbed you and said, come on. But tell me what brings you into LLN and your involvement in the organization.
Well, similar to Debbie, I did start off in the semiconductor medical devices industry. I was an HR assistant for about 2.5 years. But, it was a global company. It was heavily Asian populated. And then looking for a new opportunity, I came to Gachina, where there's a huge emphasis in Latino culture. And I come up from a very untraditional Hispanic culture where we listen to the music, we eat the food, and we speak the language, and that's about it. So I almost feel like I don't really belong here, but it's my people. So it was a really it was an opportunity that I think I was looking for a long time, because I don't really know much about what is a Latino culture. I didn't really grow up in that way just because my mom came here when she was 15 and came pretty Americanized. So being part of a community like this and understanding the challenges this community faces and an opportunity to share a voice and, share ideas and see what other resources are available, are really important to me. I take pride in being resourceful, and I want to share those tools to everybody else. So being part of this community, being part of this advocacy board, I'm still learning a lot. I've been here for 3.5 years, and I feel like I'm just barely making a dent in what landscape is, what horticulture is. But I'm very, very curious, and I want to learn more, and I want to see how I can contribute. And if I could make just one little itty bitty impact, I think that's made my career.
That's awesome, Jennifer. That's awesome. Debbie?
I did want to add, when I was growing up, one of my uncles is from Puerto Rico. And so two of my cousins are half Puerto Rican. And so ever since I was a little girl, I got to get a little bit of a flavor of that, a little taste of that. And that was very exciting. And then more recently, my nephew Joshua, just this last March, he married Ileana Asensio, and she is from Guadalajara. And we just love her. So
That's
she's
awesome.
awesome. And so it's a cultural thing. And then I have to say, back to the food thing, because I'm primarily a British ancestry, and we have really boring food. I mean, it's like potatoes and kale for everyone. Yay. Everything is like kind of brown and neutral colored. And then I have my cousins, and it's just like, wow, they've got exciting food here. It's got flavor.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you both for your involvement in the LLN. We absolutely couldn't do it without differing ideas, differing experiences, all of those coming together and sitting back and trying to figure out how we can do cool stuff like this and share little tidbits about the Latino culture with others that are maybe struggling with some problems that we've gone through or we haven't figured out yet. We can solve them together as a group. And that I think is the coolest thing for me. So working with the horsepower that NALP is, and then a bunch of like-minded individuals that just have a sincere caring for these human beings, I think that's really awesome and a noble cause and one that warms my heart. So that's why I joined, and I appreciate both of you serving with me. So this is about the time where we should start wrapping ourselves up. Anything else on the top of your mind that anybody wants to share before we get to our rose and our thorn discussion? Awesome. So if we think about the rose and the thorn discussion, when I think about this, the rose for me is I have a brand new granddaughter. She is, I think, turning 7 months now and is pulling herself up and wandering around the house. But the coolest thing is she learned to say Papa before she learned to say Mama or Grandma or her Mimi. So her first words were the Papa. So that is the rose for me, and warms my heart to be able to spend time with her. The thorn for me, I would say, is back to what we were talking about with the Latino Landscape Network. I think there are a lot of folks out there. I hope there's somebody in today's audience that would like to participate. This is not a heavy lift. It's not a heavy ask, but having more diversity and having more ideas inside of the Latino Landscape Network, I think would really make the organization and our vision and the work that we're trying to accomplish that much more fruitful and beneficial. So the thorn would be, if someone's out there listening, and you have a desire to participate in LLN, we'd absolutely love to have you join us. Go on to NALP's website. You'll be able to find the click or a link in there for LLN. And so, Kim, that's what you get when the LLN takes this over. It's going to be a lot of shameless plugs for that organization. So, Jennifer, your rose and your thorn.
I don't know. There's so many roses. Which one do I pick? I guess the rose is, my nephew, he just turned 2, and I guess my thorn with that too is we're trying to get him to talk, but you know, I've one thing I'm learning about child development is a child would know if they need to talk or not, because if he keep getting what he wants, he don't need to use his words. So every time I talk to him, I'm like, use your words, use your words.
How funny.
But it's been fun. I love the Thea life. I was totally made for it. So that's definitely my rose. I would say, I think my thorn would be, you know, finding people for this industry. You know, it is a very viable career and there's so many opportunities. And, you know, it's not just being a gardener, like you're a horticulturalist. There's so much you can do. And I just wish there was more awareness about it that, you know, it is a good career. It's not this stereotypical, you know, whatever stigma they put around it. I mean, there was an article that NLP sent out about landscape architect being now part of the STEM program.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting that out there and having these conversations with different college students and all that, that'd be great because I have positions to fill. Doesn't anyone need a job?
Oh my God.
I love it. Thank you, Jennifer. Debbie, your rose and your thorn.
My rose is being in this industry, doing stuff like I'm doing with you guys right here today. The associations I'm involved with, the people I meet, it's just, I just love the Latino culture. I just absolutely love it. And then of course I mentioned my family. Absolutely the rose, and the rose just keeps getting bigger and bigger. As far as the thorn, I think a lot of folks out there, Latinos, are more capable of what they think they are. And I wish more could see that. Wish more could see that. Yeah.
I would agree with you. Debbie, thank you so much for hanging out with me. Jennifer, thank you again so much. I appreciate it. And a big thank you to all of our listeners. Please don't forget to subscribe and leave a review. Thank you and take care, everybody.